And welcome to episode 71 of the Knitting Pretty podcast. It is September 19th, 2016. My name's Em. You can find me all over the internet as KnitFast, DieCozy, particularly Ravelry, Instagram, Pinterest, and Twitter. There are show notes for the podcast at emmaknits.net under the Knitting Pretty podcast tab. And there's a Facebook page at facebook.com/emmaknits. And there's a Ravelry group full of excellent people, which you can find by searching Knitting Pretty Podcast or some variation thereof in the Groups tab on Ravelry. I think that's it. So, yes, enough with the introductions. How are you guys doing? I'm doing pretty good. It's been a very tiring 2 weeks, so if I'm kind of like stuttery and derpy tonight, it's not because I don't love you, it's because I'm so tired I feel drunk. I've been working lots of overtime at work. We've got some people on vacation, which is awesome for them because I'm sure Iceland is wonderful, but I'm really looking forward to them coming back. Anyway, so how are you? I hope you're better than me. I hope you're a little more, like, on it than I am right now. That'd be great for you. Thank you for listening. Obviously, I'm going to be a little rambly today, but I hope that you enjoy the show. Today is an excellent show to be listening to because I'll be doing the first half of the fall fashion segment, which I will get to in a bit. But for now, let's move on to the crafting content. So in my past, I did finish a thing this week. I finished the beeswax hat by Amy Vandelaar, and I used Muse Fiberworks Merlot DK in an unnamed colorway that was it's a lovely color of orangey, browny, amber color. Not a super saturated color, honestly. It's kind of like a faded amber color. Let's call it faded amber, because that's what it is. Anyway, lovely yarn to work with. Nice bouncy DK. I think it's pretty similar to the Superwash DK weight base that a lot of dyers carry. But just really nicely dyed. It has little speckles of blues and greens on it, which when they, I'm gonna say a lot today, apparently. I'm so sorry. I'm not fit to be podcasting, but I want to do it. I want to do it, so I'm here. Anyway, there we go again. Sorry. When blue or green dye lands on an orange base, because they're fairly complementary colors, they're not exact complement, well, blue is, but not green. Anyway, they're almost complementary colors. They're on opposite sides of the color wheel. They combine together to make grayish brown. So it means that the speckles on the orange yarn are not actually blue and green so much as they are grayish brown. And that looks awesome. It just gives a slight mottling to the yarn, but it has more depth. You can, this is a tip for dyeing. If you want to create a brown color, you can either use brown dye or you can use complementary colors to create brown. And if you're careful and have some level of experience, because it is kind of tricky, you can create a much more vibrant, complex brown through complementary colors. So that's something you can also look into if you're combining fibers for spinning. If you card fibers, whether with a blending board, which is a good cheap option for carding, or a drum carder, which is a much more bigger investment, but obviously does more, like purely more volume, you can create a neutral color by blending all sorts of different fibers in complementary colors, and that will create a sort of medium brown, and it's a pretty awesome way to get a heathered yarn. If you look at a lot of your favorite heathered yarn colors that are neutral, you'll find that there's actually, you know, little pops of hot pink and yellow and blue and green in there. It's just they're so tiny because they're just one hair at a time. And so you get really, really great colors. And to finish off this tangent, I will recommend, if you're interested in blending colors for spinning, to check out Color in Spinning by Deb Menz. It is the authority on the matter, book-wise. Okay. Back to my hat. So the beeswax hat by Amy Vandelaar. It's a paid-for pattern on Ravelry. A friend of mine had given it to me, and it was a lovely knit. Very, very fun. It's a twisted stitch pattern. So just one-by-one cables. Easy, easy, easy to do. not a super easy pattern to do, just because you have to pay attention and follow the charts and all that. It is both charted and written. I was going to say charted and written, and that would have made me sound dumb. Oh well. Anyway, so if you prefer your patterns written as opposed to charted, I don't really understand you as a person, but it's in the pattern there for you if you like it that way. I don't judge. It's fine. You're fine. Your brain just doesn't make sense to me. We're very different. I hate written patterns. I don't get them. I can't read them. I lose track and I get bored. Anyway. Oh my gosh, so many tangents. Today's going to be such a long episode. Feel free to pause halfway through and get yourself a drink. A stiff drink if you need it. Anyway, great pattern. I would say that it is not a pattern for a super beginner. There is kind of an assumption that you know what you're doing. You know your way around a hat. It says things like, use a circular needle a good length for making a hat. Now, if you've never made a hat before, maybe you don't know a good length for making a hat. There was certainly a time in my knitting experiences where I wouldn't have known what that even meant. But what the designer is trying to get across is you're free to use double-pointed needles. You're free to go magic loop. You're free to use a 16-inch circular. You're free to use two circulars. Like, she doesn't specify what to use and therefore leaves you with all the options. But just things like that. I would say it's a good pattern if you've already knit a hat or two. But yeah, great pattern. Super cute. I really like the way the chart for the cabled bees honeycomb pattern blends into the ribbing of the brim. It kind of partially goes into the honeycomb for a little while and then blends all the way into the honeycomb. And it's really cute. It's a neat hat and I like it a lot. I do find that it's a little short. It fits more like a toque than a slouchy hat. And well, that's kind of how it fits in the pictures too. I don't know, it says it's a 9-inch hat, and I knit all the charts, and my gauge was pretty good, and it's not a 9-inch hat. But that's fine, because a toque is cute too, so yay toque. I tend to wear a slouchier hat just because that's what I'm used to. I've also had very short hair for a very long time, and a toque looks kind of cancer patient-y on short hair, which, you know, is fine. There's nothing wrong with looking like you don't have hair, because hair is negligible in the grand scheme of things, but people tend to ask you how you're doing, and you know, I don't need that. Yeah, cool pattern. It's a great hat. I like it a lot, and the yarn was really nice. So if you happen to be able to get your hands on some Muse, I'll link her Etsy in the show notes. It was empty, and I didn't see her at the last Fiber Festival that she's local to me, and I didn't see her at the last Fiber Festival, so I don't know if she's taking a break or if she was just out of town, but anyway, she's a lovely woman, and if you get a chance to get some of her yarn, I suggest you do, because she's delightful. Okay, that's all I finished. So on to my present. I cast something new on, something completely out of the blue. I started, there's the again. Stop that. I started the Roslyn dress. It's by Veronique Avery, and it's more of a tunic than a dress. I actually intend to wear it as a dress. I'm going to wear it as a possibly too short for my age, but who's really counting, dress with tights or leggings or something. Like opaque tights, not pantyhose or nothing. Opaque tights. Practically leggings. That's my intention anyway. It'll be long enough that it fully covers my butt. That's really all I need. And so yeah, it's a tunic to dress length sweater with waist shaping, but otherwise very simple, just ribbed at the bottom. And it's got short sleeves. I think I'll make mine a little longer, depends how much yarn I have. And then it has a turtleneck. And it's not like a super tight turtleneck, but it is a turtleneck. The turtleneck is the last thing you knit. So again, if I have the yarn, I might make it slightly bigger for more of a cowl neck, because I'm not so sure how I feel about turtlenecks. I've never liked them in the past, but I used to be a lot bustier than I am, and turtlenecks tend to make boobs look enormous, and mine are super tiny, so maybe they'll, like, make them look neutral. I don't know. That was probably an overshare. Anyway, I'm not worrying about the turtleneck until I get there, basically, is what I'm saying. We'll see. I'm sure it'll be cute. And the yarn I'm using is the handspun I did during last year's Tour de Fleece and ongoing afterwards, because I didn't get it done in time. It is a gradient of locally grown and processed wools. And so I'm starting with a nearly black and then moving to a dark gray and then a medium gray and then a slightly lighter medium gray. They're really too close, these two lighter medium grays. I wish they were a little bit more different, but what are you gonna do? And then I've got some natural white wool. And the white I processed myself from fleece, but the others are all processed by a local mill, or in the case of the dark gray, by hand on a drum carder. The dark gray was the wool, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, the wool that I just could not spin a whole sweater's worth out of. I really wanted a whole sweater lot out of this fiber. I was so excited about it because it was so cheap. And then as I began spinning it, not only did I find that it was very, very sticky with lanolin, but that there were, like, dead ticks in it. Yuck. And so I managed to spin, like, 150 grams or something before I just could not pick any more dead bugs out of my fiber and threw it all out because I was so grossed out. But the wool itself is actually really nice. That particular wool is a Romney Sutton cross sheep. And, Sutton? Not Sutton. That doesn't sound right. Maybe I'm getting confused because I have extended family by the last name of Sutton. It's not Southdown. It's Suffolk. Suffolk. See, that's better. It's not Sutton. The Suttons, I believe, might have been Romney supporters, but maybe that's where my confusion was going. Anyway, it's a Romney Suffolk cross sheep. And so Romney is fairly soft, fairly long wool that has a lovely drape to it. And then Suffolk is a Downs wool, so it's very bouncy and springy. And the combination in these sheep was lovely because it's a soft, fairly, not fine like a merino fine, but fine enough wool that has a lot of bounce to it, but not a super short staple length. And that's a really nice combination for spinning and knitting. It's just unfortunate about the ticks. Anyway, the dark, almost black brown and the two lighter grays are organically raised Romney sheep. And the white is a crossbreed of Finn and East Frisian and Texel sheep. And that was a farm that does sheep for meat, so they shear the sheeps before they sheeps. That's the plural of sheep. Anyway, they shear the poor bastards before they send them off for slaughter, and I'm okay with that. I think it's, you know, there's a demand for the meat, and they're raised on beautiful pasture, and they seem to be happy creatures. They do, like, kids' schools tour the farm beforehand. There's no misery and death in most of these animals' lives. And then their wool gets used too, which is good. It makes the use of the animal feel less wasteful. And so I'm happy with it. And it wasn't a cheap fleece either. It's very nice fleece. It's got some very different textures depending on where on the sheep the wool's from, which isn't ideal in a spinning fleece, but if you're buying just one fleece and you want to get a lot out of it, it actually provides some options. So anyway, it's a bottom-up knit, and I am about 4 inches into it. I've knit the ribbing, and I've moved on to the plain stockinette, so now it's just going around and around and around in stockinette forever, basically. I'm very excited about this knit. I don't know if you can tell from all the chatter, but I'm very excited. I think it's going to be a great piece of clothing. I am enjoying knitting it. I'm excited to be using this yarn. I'm just happy with it. The pattern has a tubular cast on. I haven't used a tubular cast on in a long time. The last one I did was, I believe, on my voleur hat, which was just a terrible, terrible knitting experience because of the stitch pattern being so dense, but is an absolutely luscious, beautiful hat. I recommend checking it out if you have a strong stomach for cables. I believe the cables are 16 stitches cross. They are big cables. Anyway, so I think I've only ever done a tubular cast on once before, and I don't think it was this method for it, but it's great. I love it. It's so cool. And a tubular cast on is the sort of thing that I understand in concept what's happening. I would really like to actually understand how I'm doing that. It's like, you know, there are whole segments of math in high school that I learned how to do, but no one really told me how they worked, and so I've completely forgotten them. I feel like that about tubular cast-ons. I feel about tubular cast-ons the same way I feel about radians or logarithms. I'm not much for math. I'm good at arithmetic, but not real math. And anyway, so I need to, maybe TechKnitter has sort of how tubular cast-ons actually work. I don't know. If you've seen a good explanation of the nitty-gritty of tubular cast-on, I would love to be directed towards it, because I want to know how you go from having stitches on waste yarn to not needing those stitches to be on waste yarn. I get it, but I don't get it. It's cool anyway. Yeah, so that is what I'm working on right now. I haven't worked on anything else. And I'm not going to talk about future patterns right now, because let's move on to show and tell and do part one of the fall fashion report. Yay! So this is my favorite part of the podcast. It's something that I've done every 6 months for the entire time I've been doing this. And basically, I've spent some time looking at the trends on the runways for fall, winter 2016, and I have kind of categorized that a little bit and then tried to match it up with knitting patterns. And as I go along, I forgot to actually put any in, but as I go along, I will be mentioning things regarding sewing patterns as well. This time, I don't know if I have any for today's stuff anyway. Because, as I was saying last episode, this has really expanded more from a knitting podcast into a DIY clothing making podcast with a knitting focus, and that's how I like it. So, for those of you who listen because of that, hopefully I can draw your attention to some sewing patterns that are on trend as well. I think I'm just going to jump in. I have a couple of different main topics for you guys today. I'm going to talk about fabrics and colors and themes and accessories that are on trend and how they connect with knitting and crafting in general. Then next week we'll talk about like design elements and actual knitwear trends and things like that. So the fabrics that, first of all, let's just talk about fall winter 2016. It's, and I think I kind of said it last time, last spring, that fashion is just like, it's gone kind of crazy. There's just a lot of everything. And this season's a little more subdued than the last, and I imagine it will continue getting more subdued. The world climate, like not the, well, climate change obviously has an effect. Eloise, is now the time to sharpen your claws? No, it is not. Climate change is not what I mean, but it does have, is taken into account. But just the political climate, the economic climate, tends to have a fairly noticeable effect on fashion, and the political climate in the world right now is just awful. Whether it's the American election, which, obviously fall, winter 2015, or 16, I mean, was known, but, the U.S. presidential race will be having its effect on the fashion world right now. Possibly making it crazier. I don't know. And just the state of the world with terrorist attacks and people fleeing conflict and, you know, there's a lot of horrible stuff going on right now, and that will have a slightly subduing effect on fashion, but at the same time, fashion trends are just in this upswing of anything goes, more is better craziness that is a little unusual. It's, you know, it's been easier in the past to pick out defined trends in all of the shows or in a healthy chunk of the shows, you know, say that a large number of people took inspiration from equestrian apparel or whatever. And you see that over and over in the shows. And here it's like a trend. It takes three people to call it a trend because that's all you're going to get. And then there's something else on the next three people. And the next person is just doing something completely off out of left field. And it's cool. It means that fashion is interesting and there's something for everybody. It also means that it's really hard to put together these freaking fashion recaps because there's no defined trends. But we do our best, is the goal. So, as far as fabrics, there's a lot of luxurious fabrics and tactile and visually tactile. I mean, obviously, that's an oxymoron. Things can't be visually tactile unless you physically rub them with your eyeballs, which is, bleh, don't do that. You'll get scratched on your cornea. But things that are, like, you know what I mean? Things that are lush for your eyes to look at. Things that have texture and depth and color that is more than just a single flat surface. And fall always has more lushness to it than spring. Spring is floatier and more floral and lighter and generally has more airiness to the clothing. There's more, the things hold themselves up, generally because they're made of lighter fabrics. You know, you cannot make leather float in the air like you can with chiffon. But this is a particularly lush fall. But there's also some funny things about it. So one of the trends that did show up in a lot of designers was like lurex, sparkly fabric, but also tinsel-based fabrics. Fabrics that look shockingly like they were knit with sparkly fun fur. And so if you, like me, happen to have a ball of sparkly fun fur sitting in your stash that you regret the purchase of, except that you needed it for that one stupid thing, maybe now's the time to, I don't know what, knit something with it and call it trendy? I don't know. But if you happen to like sparkly fun fur, or you want, you know, the three-year-old child in your life to feel excited, you can be on trend and knit them a fun fur sweater. But maybe don't. I don't know. Fun fur is a divisive topic. Some people actually really enjoy it, and that's fine. I find it unpleasant to work with, but the effect is certainly tactile for your eyes. Pinstripes and suiting in general for a fairly tailored masculine look was all over the runways, but pinstripes in particular showed up, as opposed to just plain wool suiting. And I mean, for women's fashion, lots and lots of menswear inspired stuff. Some very cool stuff involving completely different ways of tailoring and of constructing garments. So who was it? I don't know. Givenchy, maybe? But that could just, I could just be talking. I don't know. Anyway, somebody, it might be Gucci. Seems like a Gucci sort of thing. Anyway, blazers, tuxedo jackets, really, that the collar of the jacket then detached from one side and swooped across to the other side and attached at a side seam. Just really cool ways of doing menswear or menswear-inspired clothing. But anyway, back to the fabrics. So pinstripes are a thing, again, and that's great because pinstripe fabrics are classic. And anything that you would make now in a pinstriped fabric, you could keep on wearing regardless of whether or not pinstripes are still in, because they are such a classic. And so I did want to mention one pattern. It's a knitting pattern for the diagonal pinstripe scarf. It's by Pearl Soho, so it's a free pattern. All of Pearl Soho patterns are free. They're a shop in New York, and they have lovely patterns in very expensive yarn. basically. If it's kind of like a fun drinking game to see how expensive various Pearl Soho patterns would be if you were to price them out based on the recommended yarns. And I mean, there's no reason to drink other than the fact that, you know, you drink to make yourself feel better about how you don't have the money for those yarns. I don't know. So maybe not a fun game, but whatever. It's a bias knit rectangle that is done in one color with two row stripes of another color. So it has a kind of pinstripey look to it. And it's just, it's really pretty and it's classic and it's just luscious. And I'm sure it's in a beautiful yarn that I can't afford. But it's a cool pattern. And if you're looking to get a little pinstripiness into your knitting, that would be the way to do it. But if you're sewing, any kind of tailored menswear inspired patterns with some pinstripes is golden right now. Are golden, that is. Subject verb agreement is hard. Another fabric that's super in is velvet. Now, velvet is not something that translates well to knitting unless you like knitting with chenille, I suppose, but we don't like knitting with chenille. It's terrible. But velvet was one of the biggest trends on the runways, and just beautiful, rich colors of velvet, stretch velvet, all manner of different kinds of velvet. Velvet used for lightweight, floaty slip dresses that, you know, had very little weight to them. Velvet used for big, heavy coats. Velvet for everything. And I love velvet. I was a 6-year-old once, and I have never lost that love for, like, that shiny iridescentness of it. I think it's beautiful fabric. Don't like sewing with it because it makes little fluffies all over everything, but it's a beautiful fabric. And did you know you can get washable cotton velvet? It's expensive, but it's amazing. So if you want to go for the velvet, I suggest looking into the idea of cotton velvet, because it is a thing and it is washable and it's beautiful. Just so you know. Another fabric is brocade, or sort of jacquard and brocaded upholstery style fabrics. Again, lots of different runways in lots of different applications, from coats to dresses. And then patent leather, vinyl, and PVC. Very shiny, wet look, latex, that kind of stuff. Also made a good showing. Again, not something that really translates to knitting, but maybe it's time for those patent leather shoes you always wanted. Or a really shiny rain jacket? I don't know. Let's move on to colors. So I will try and remember to link the Pantone color report for fall winter 2016. It's a beautiful warm toned lush season characterized by rusty reds and oranges and a nice yellow. Well, nice in some people's opinion and not others. It's a slightly acidy, greeny based mustard yellow, which just makes me super excited, but I can understand if you're not into that. It's a very particular yellow. And not much in the way of different blues or greens, although Pantone themselves talk a lot about blue as being the color of the season. But then, you know, other color reports I've seen focus much more heavily on the warm colors, so you take it with a grain of salt. It's all through interpretation. And I mean, even all of this is through my interpretation, my lens of looking at fashion. I'm probably not going to recommend patterns to you that I think are super ugly, even if they're really on trend, because I just can't make myself, you know? So fashion is so self-interpretive, and there's nothing you can do about that. So follow the colors that make you happy, but there are lots of teals and blues too, if you're into blues, but oh, the burgundies and the reds and the oranges and the yellows are just super nice. The real neutral of the moment, though, is camel or tan, depending on how nice you want your color to sound. And I was thinking, because of that beautiful tan camel color, now is the time to embrace those natural colored alpaca yarns, because that color of, like, natural cafe au lait alpaca is just gorgeous, and it's absolutely the color of the moment. And you know, a lot of times we work with dyed yarns, and there are some so amazing, amazing natural colors coming off of the animals that we get our yarn from. And I just wanted to point you towards Hinterland Farms. This is, so the website is hinterlandfarm.ca. It is a local to me yarn producer, relatively local to me yarn producer. The proprietress started with rescued alpacas, and she continues to rescue alpacas and then blend the alpaca fiber with, I think, Rambouillet. Yep. 50%, so the Range is one of the yarns, and it's the one that I am super lusting after. 50% Canadian Rambouillet and 50% are homegrown alpaca. And so there are a couple natural colors, including a lovely, lovely caramelly tan color. But that blend of wool, puffy wool, with drapey alpaca really helps to keep the alpaca from stretching out on you. And it's just gorgeous. And these yarns are beautiful. And they come in dyed colors too. But I wanted to direct you towards this yarn provider, because I just think what she's doing is really neat. And I think the idea of rescuing alpacas and giving them a new life, but also giving them a way of paying their way. The alpacas don't care about that, but the alpaca keepers need to care about that. And so, yeah, anyway, it's cool. Just the idea of local, ethically farmed wool makes me happy. One thing I should mention with these fashion reports, like I said, it's all through my lens of what is nice and not nice. I also tend to gravitate towards Canadian designers when I can, or Canadian yarn producers. You hear a lot about American-made wools, and that's great, but I'm not American, and so that the whole, like, I think Brooklyn Tweed yarns are amazing, and I think that they're working, or their work trying to get a 100% American-made product from farm to production to sales, I think that's great. It's just not something that's, like, super close to my heart. So I do try and direct you towards Canadians as much as I can. We Canadians have a little bit of an inferiority complex about things like that, I think. I also try to find people who are friends of friends, you know, because why not support the people you know? That's that whole local thing. Anyway, back to colors. So one of the strongest color combinations on the runways was a kind of dusty, warm rose pink with that acid mustard yellow. And that's very much a spring color combination, but there's something about the green undertone of the yellow and the brown undertone of the pink that do make it a very fall kind of color combination. But it's also, it's kind of ugly pretty. It's a little obnoxious, but I don't know, it really works and it's kind of fun. And I don't know that everyone would want to wear it, but maybe for striping in an accessory or something, these two colors go really well together. But we're also used heavily separately, which gives even more option. And so I wanted to draw your attention to the Empyrean Cowl by Louisa Demet. It's in the Fall 2016 Knit Scene. And the cowl itself is a nice cowl. It's textured, it's knit in the round, it's just a cowl, really. If you like the pattern, then great, I'm glad that I draw you to it. But it's more that the cowl is in this sort of purpley, dusty rose color, and the model's shirt is in this exact acid yellow. So it uses the combination of these two colors in the styling of the pattern, and I thought that that was kind of cool and a good illustration. And also, it's a nice cowl. Pumpkin orange was the other big color. So if you're into pumpkin orange, good for you. I'm glad, because I am so into pumpkin orange. And pumpkin everything happens in fall, so you might as well just enjoy the pumpkin orange yarns, right? There's some lovely oranges out there. You do have to look kind of harder to get a really nice orange. People don't provide a lot in the way of orange colorways because it's not a very popular color. Oranges and yellows do not sell well. I learned this as a dyer, that you will sell purples and greens and blues like crazy, but a solid or semi-solid or multicolored thing with orange in it is less likely to sell. It's a shame, because there's some lovely things out there. Beaver Slide Dry Goods, I believe, has some neat oranges right now. The Prairie Fire color's a nice sort of coral-based reddy orange. strongly recommend. So let's move on to themes. The first theme that I want to mention, it was not the most prevalent, but it's the one that makes me happiest, is cat imagery and leopard print. So, like necklaces with cats on them, cat purses, things with cat ears, just cat stuff, like kitties on everything. It's like the internet finally escaped the wiring and joined the real world. That's like Ultron or something. Anyway, so I found a couple cat patterns for you, and this just makes me happy. It is what it is. Anyway, the first is called Missy C. Missy, M-I-S-S-Y, C, like the letter C. It's by Jenny Penny. It's a pair of mittens, and they're colorwork mittens, and they have, if you put your two hands together, like, with your thumbs out of it, so it's just the flat edges of your two hands pressed together, it's a cat face on the mittens, and it is flawlessly charted, so it looks really, really good, and, like, the sample's done in white and gray, and then it's got duplicate stitch on the eyes of the cat and the nose of the cat, so there's a little bit of color, and it's, like, really, really good. It's a really well-done chart. Great detail, awesome-looking mittens, like, oh my god, I love these mittens. I think I need cat mittens. I never knew I needed cat mittens, but I think I need cat mittens. They're just beautiful, and the thumbs have fish skeletons, and the palms have more fish on them, and non-skeleton fish, and then there's hearts all around the cat's head, and a little bit of chevroning on the cuffs. I'd probably actually do away with the chevroning myself. That's not really my thing. I'd probably just do plain cuffs in the contrast color. But anyway, super cute cat gloves, and I just, like, these are the gloves to make for the cat lover in your life, because they're amazing. And fashionable, apparently, gloves with cats on them. So, excuse me while I just add to queue. It is a paid pattern on Ravelry. It is 50 Swedish kroner, so 7.92 Canadian. It's gonna be slightly less American. She's also got a lynx pattern. If you like your cats a little more butch, this one's just a house cat. But so cool. It's so well done, like, you have to go check it out. And if you like your cats to be a little more stylized and a little less oddly realistic, considering that it's knitting, the Crazy Cat Hat by Solène Leroux is a pattern that was put out this month. It's an intarsia cat hat. It's got cats all over it. It's done in pink, and then it's got cats in white and mustard yellow. It's like pink and mustard yellow are a thing right now. Anyway, it's just great. It's a really fun, funny hat with cat faces on it, and they've got these big wide yellow eyes, and it's really cool. I think you'll like it. And she talks about intarsia not being all that difficult, and she's right, it's not. Intarsia is a slightly fiddly technique because there's yarn management to kind of deal with, but other than that, it's not that hard. And so, yeah, it's a cute pattern, and it's got a pom-pom. I always love a good pom-pom. The next pattern is called Check Me Out. Meow. It's so cute and punny. It is cat, owl, and panda knee-high socks. They're $6 Ravelry download. So if you are into cats, owls, or pandas on a simple knee-high sock, or you just want a knee-high sock recipe that also has potential for cats, this is your pattern. It's got sizes from child to adult. Everyone can have adorable cat socks. And the way these are cat socks, they're just gray. They've got a little meow and a heart in colorwork on the heel for a little bit of extra reinforcement. But then on the front of the shin, where the cuff is, there's little ears on the cuff and an embroidered cat face underneath those ears, right on your shins, under your knees. Ha! They're so cute. Super cute. Like, I could see them being absolutely adorable on a little kid, and adorable in that kind of ironic, I know I'm not a child, but I still enjoy childish things way on a grown adult, I think. Anyway, little ears on socks. Socks with ears. Who heard of such a thing? So cute. In a less whimsical vein, the Spots Cowl by Hilary Smith Callis is a pattern that is available for $1.99 on Ravelry and at Knit Picks, I think, as well. And it's a leopard print double knit cowl. If you haven't done any double knitting, maybe this would be a pattern to try it out. It's a really great technique that gives you a two-sided fabric. Both sides are the right side, but they're just reversed. So one side in the sample has a purple background with pink leopard spots, and the opposite side is a pink background with purple. You could obviously go for a more traditional or natural, I suppose, looking leopard print to get the idea of the pattern across a little bit better, but it doesn't matter. It's your cowl. You do what you want. Anyway, it's not a very expensive pattern, and it's really cute. So, the next theme I wanted to talk about, because I can't talk about cats all day. I could. I might. No, let's not. Anyway, dark romance, which I think is just fancy fashion talk for goth. If you had gothy leanings in the past, or if you never acted upon them because you didn't want to stand apart so much, but you like it, now is the time to embrace your inner goth, because lots and lots of black and lace and ruffles and transparency and sort of distressed fabrics and high collars and short skirts and big boots and the whole gothy thing. I mean, it's not like costumey in the way that some goth looks can be, but it's pretty gothy. So, anyway, fun for you guys who are into it. There were a couple patterns I just wanted to mention that kind of would work with the gothy look or a more colorful, darkly romantic thing. I don't know what a dark romance is. Is that like Wuthering Heights where you hate everybody and then they die? Is that what a dark romance is? I don't know. Anyway, a pattern called Morticia by Boo Knits. Boo Knits is the go-to designer for your over-the-top lacy romantic shawls, for sure. And I figure there's nobody more goth than Morticia Adams. So this pattern is just a beautiful crescent-shaped lace shawl. One of the cool things about Boo Knits is she makes the points of the shawl be easy to block out into very strong points, so they actually kind of create a kind of tassel-y fringy look, and then there's beads on the tassel-y fringy points, and it's a beautiful, ornate, romantic, lacy shawl that's just luscious. And currently the main picture, it's done in a dark purple, which I think is about as darkly romantic as you can be without just embracing pure black. Any Boo Knits pattern, though, will embrace your dark romantic tendencies. The other pattern I wanted to mention is the Bell Ruffle Gloves by Veronica O'Neill. They are a fingerless mitt with three buttons at the wrist on the outside, and they go about halfway up the forearm and have a big floofy ruffle, knitted ruffle, at the top. And they're done in two colors, so there's a little bit of contrast color just to kind of make the details pop, and they're a really neat glove. And the first sample, the Veronica O'Neill sample, is done in a gray and black, and it just is very gothy indeed, very Victorian, very pretty, actually. I don't normally spring for ruffles, but I really like these. There's a sample, or not a sample, a user, a Ravelry user's one done in red and black, which, again, with the goth. And then there's one just done in plain black with no contrast color, and she's got on an all-black outfit and black fingernails, and them's your gloves for this trend, absolutely. And they look super cute, and I don't know, I like them. I like the drama of them. And I think that's the thing, is this season's fashion is dramatic, and if you are into your drama, this is a good season for you. in the theme of drama, the other theme I wanted to mention is just the sort of costumey historical fashion, incorporated with modern elements, but still costumey historical fashion. There's lots of dresses on the runways that could be pulled straight from, well, not straight, again, modern elements, but pulled from a high fashion, anachronistic Renaissance fair. Medieval dresses. Who was showing? Anyway, Yves Saint Laurent, maybe? No, that's totally wrong. Somebody else was showing a dress that looked like a pilgrim dress, like black with a white, simple bow collar, and just really costumey historical references, and Victorian historical, and earlier, obviously, your medieval and your Renaissance, and the medieval period and your Renaissance, they're not the same time. People get them mixed up, and they're not the same thing. Anyway, whatever. That's a topic that we don't need to go into. But just costumey historical fashion. So that's fun. And if you like empire waists and high necks and well-placed ruffles, I think you could maybe have a look at the runways, because there might be some things that make you happy to look at. Let's move on to the last segment for today, for this, accessories. So, one is stoles, or rectangular shawls, I guess is the other word. But stoles generally imply a heavier weight thing, less of a lacy, floofy thing, and more of a heavyweight item. But not just any stoles, it's more that they are worn on the runways in a different way, and it was typically in fur, but we don't knit with fur. You can sew with your faux fur, you could sew with real fur if you have access to it, but I certainly don't. You could knit it in fun fur, but I recommend not. It's stoles worn kind of across the body, like over one shoulder and then across to the opposite hip and on the back as well. And that was sort of style for having these beautiful heavyweight stoles being worn. And so I thought I might as well mention a couple of stole patterns that could be worn that way, that have enough oomph to them to be worn that way, because a lacy, lightweight stole or rectangular wrap or whatever is not going to hold its shape enough to be worn like that. But something with a little body could be worn crossbody. And these stoles that were on the runways were basically just very solid, almost self-supporting solid fabric. So wearing them across body would not mess with the lines of the stole that much. I think with the knitted ones you could even wear them under a belt, like across your body and then belted. Or just kind of embrace it and see what happens. Just wear it like a beauty queen sash. I don't care. Anyway, the patterns I wanted to mention. The first is Florence. It's by Bristol Ivy, and it's in the autumn 2016 issue of Pom Pom Quarterly. It is a modular gradient that looks like it's like a tessellating cube pattern, kind of. And it's done, like I said, in a gradient. So it starts in a dark pink and moves to a light pink through all the different things. And you can use your favorite yarns and whatever. But, I mean, the point is you could do whatever color you wanted. Wouldn't have to be a gradient. But it is knit modularly. And so it opens up the option for a lot of color play. But anyway, it's a nice big rectangular wrap that could be absolutely worn in that style, but it's knit in a light fingering weight, so it wouldn't be too hot. Because that's the thing about wearing a stole across your body, is if you tend to overheat, that'll do it. The second pattern is the Brioche Chevron Wrap by Stephen West. He's been releasing variations on the Brioche Chevron theme. It's just brioche knitted in chevrons. It's nothing totally shocking. But anyway, this is a big-sized brioche chevron. I think I talked about the brioche chevron scarf and cowl before. This one's a full-size wrap, and it's beautiful. It is really a thing of beauty. You could do so much with the color in this pattern. You could keep it really simple and stick with plain colors, or you could do what he has and just use little scraps of this and that. it can be as wild as you want it to. But it is a stole that definitely has the physical oomph to wear across your body like that without it crumpling up. And it's just a thing of beauty, and you need to look at it. And the pictures are all taken in front of this like crazy graffiti wall, and then the thing's a million colors, and Stephen himself is wearing a million different things, and it's great. It's a fun shoot. And you don't have to wear all of the silly things if you don't want to. You gotta picture yourself in Stephen West's patterns in wearing your own style of clothing and not his, and it makes the whole thing a lot more approachable. The next accessory that bears mentioning is gloves, either very over-the-top embellished gloves, which I'm not going to find you patterns for. You can embellish your gloves however your heart desires. Ruffles and flowers, fake flowers, and just different colors and buttons, and basically anything that could be stuck on a glove was stuck on a glove. But the other thing was bicep height gloves, so I thought I'd mention a couple of those. The first pattern I think I mentioned on a previous fashion report. It's the Elegant Gloves by Heather Zopetti from the Jane Austen Knits Fall 2013 interweave publication. They have a peacock feather in lace down them, and they've got a ribbon at the top to keep them up, but they are a bicep height glove, and they're pretty spectacular, and I think they're a pretty amazing pattern. You can wear them with sleeveless things or with sleeves that cover the top of the gloves, but the whole point is getting a kind of long-sleeved look through wearing gloves rather than through actual long sleeves. I don't know how practical it is, but it seems warm, at least. Anyway, these are beautiful gloves, and you should check them out. The next extra long glove I wanted to mention is Zibeline, I don't know, Zibeline by Catherine Vaughn. It's a much more simple glove. It's just got a simple rib to it, and again, bicep height glove. Knitting gloves is not that hard. If you haven't tried it, I recommend doing it. It's like the fingers are fiddly, but they're not hard, and you get the satisfaction of completion. It's kind of like knitting something modular. You get to complete little things over and over again. I mean, you have 10 fingers to knit, so that's fun. The other accessory thing I wanted to mention was lots and lots of shows had socks worn with high heels. So that makes my knitter's heart happy, because knitted socks deserve to be shown off, and what better way than with high heels? So I wanted to pull you a couple of recently published sock patterns that I felt were worthy of high heels. So I pulled this one, Coffee Cantata by Kaua Coffee. I've knit a pattern by this designer before. Beautiful twisted stitch work, and always free. That's spectacular. So this is a free pattern for an absolutely gorgeous twisted stitch pattern sock. Everything about it is, like, so many minute details are dealt with, and it's just beautiful. You have to look at the pictures for this one, because I can't even describe it. It's a beautiful twisted stitch motif that's on either side of your leg, and then it moves down and kind of echoes the movement of the gusset, and then it has a undulating, I think it looks like, yeah, no, it's not lace, it's just twisted stitch. It's a braided pattern on the top of the foot that is spectacular, and even the cuff has little twisted stitch cables. It is a sock to be reckoned with. Also added to my queue. And then one that's completely different, but similarly beautiful. It's called Longing for Gotland, and it's by Pia Camiborn. And this one was released this August. Again, it's 50 kroner, so about 7.92 Canadian. Ravelry download, and it has some color work up at the top, just a line of roses between two lines of leaves that go horizontally around the leg, and then stripes for the rest of the sock. So a mostly simple knit with a bit of color work, and it's done, the main sample is done in gray and light gray and yellow. And I do love some gray and yellow, so I think that's part of what drew me to these. But I also just thought that they'd be good with heels. Unlike the Twisted Stitch coffee cantata ones, these, the foot of the sock is actually as unadorned as it can be. It's not got any extra bulk to it, so you could fit it in a pair of heels. I think one thing about high heels and socks is you need the heels to fit just right. Otherwise, your sock kind of bulges out of the shoe, and that looks tacky, but you don't want it to be loose because then you'll get blisters. So, I don't know, I figured these socks have as little bulk as possible, and maybe you'd be able to wear them with shoes you already wear if you want to embrace the heels and socks thing. The last one I wanted to mention is, it's a sock pattern, it's nice enough. It's by Anne Podlasek, and it's called Milkweed Socks. It's just a simple vertical lace pattern on a sock. But I particularly wanted to mention it because it is modeled, or styled, that is, with a very cute pair of high-heeled Oxford Mary Janes. So there's an idea for how it would actually look to wear socks with a nice pair of heels, vintagey cute shoes. And yeah, other than that, the pattern looks nice enough, but it's the styling that I really wanted to draw your attention to. The last accessory that bears mentioning is neckerchiefs were a thing. In other words, all of those shawls that were really shawlettes that you knit and then it turned out they were way too damn small, now's the time to break them out because neckerchiefs are a thing. like Boy Scout style neckerchiefs, right? So one of my favorite ways to wear any kind of shawl is with the point at the front or off-center at the front, but then the center point of a triangular shawl. But then the tails actually brought around back to the front again and tied underneath. So it kind of gives a little bit of volume to the front of the shawl because of the knot underneath it. But it looks really cute with the elongated triangle shawlettes because the little tails kind of stick out from underneath the point and it has a very neckerchiefy look to it. And you know, I think we've all thought, oh, we can totally get a normal shawlette out of two skeins of koigu. That's totally possible. You can get a shawlette out of 380 yards, right? No, you can't. It makes this tiny little miniature baby shawl that no one can wear. Unless neckerchiefs are a thing. And they are. So wear all your tiny shawlettes because, you know, the end is coming for them. And they'll be unfashionable again soon. But also really cute and really convenient to wear with a coat because all you need is the extra warmth right up around your neck and then the coat does the rest of the job, so whatever. Fashion be damned, tiny shawlettes are totally wearable sometimes and in some contexts, but it'd be nice to just wear them fashionably as well, right? Okay, so that is enough fashion stuff for this week. Let's go on to my weekly obsessions. My first one is we got a new stove. And it's amazing. Our co-op, I've mentioned before, I live in a housing cooperative. That means it's kind of like being on, we call it a strata here, or like a, I don't know, what do you call it in other places? It's the organization that runs a condo building. You know, everybody has a vote and all that. Now, in a housing cooperative, it's a lot more complicated because we all own the space together. It can be infuriating, it can be fun, it can be inspiring, it can just suck the life out of you. It's a little more on the sucking the life out of me stage right now. Anyway, I've been on the board of directors for 3 years now. I've got another year before I'm not allowed to run again for a while. Yay! But I have to survive another year. Anyway, one of the things that we've been working so hard on is getting a replacement reserve plan in place and actually looking at what we need to do, what we need to be replacing both inside and outside the building, and then planning for it and budgeting for it. This has been something that our co-op in particular has really struggled with over the years, and to the point where we really haven't had anything new or properly planned repairs for about 15 years. The building was built in 1984. Most of the units still have some, at least, of the original carpet, even though it's crumbling. Our stoves were 15 years old. You know, all original cabinets, no matter how rough they are. And I mean, you can have, like, a house built in the 60s can have original cabinets still in and still functional in a kitchen now. But this is low-income, high turnover at times. We really aim for a lower turnover, but, you know, it is what it is. Anyway, it undergoes a significantly higher amount of damage than your average owner-occupied house. As much as a rental. And so, yeah, basically you have to plan maintenance, you have to plan repairs, and it just hasn't been happening in the past. And so finally, we're at this place where we've got a plan, and now we can act on it, and we got new stoves. And everybody got new stoves, and to understand how exciting the new stoves are, you have to understand our old stoves. So like I said, 15 years old, approximately. Just low-end, coil-top, cheapy stoves. They had self-cleaning ovens, that was their most exciting trait. But every single one of them tends to run 150 to 200 degrees Fahrenheit hot. No matter what temperature you turn it to, it's always 100 degrees too hot. And some of them, mine included, had taken to randomly spiking up to about 500, like the self-clean cycle was kind of trying to activate itself. I don't know what its deal was. Anyway, so burnt food all the time, just generally a nightmare. And we have new ones, and the ovens are really normal, and they go to the temperature that they say they are, and then they stay there, and they don't change, and they don't randomly burn your food, and they're glass tops, which I'm still a little bit dubious of. I advocated for and chose the glass tops because they were a much better stove, but I don't know. I've never had a glass top stove before. If I could have anything, it would be a gas range, but we're not piped for gas in the building. But they're so shiny, and the elements boil your stuff really quickly. Like, some of our old elements didn't have the ability to boil water, and now they do, and with alacrity. Oh my god. It is the bomb. I am so excited. I roasted a chicken, and it was perfect. It took a while, because I'm used to roasting a chicken at, like, 475 degrees, whether I like it or not. And I was able to have it, like, at a perfect 375. And I roasted vegetables, and not a single one was blackened. I'm looking forward to making sweet potato fries sometime. I am so tired of blackened sweet potato fries. Anyway, it's a very exciting moment, and it's hopefully the beginning of a lot of tangible repairs that make living in our place a lot more pleasant. My second obsession, I'm sorry, we're back to fashion, is my fall wardrobe planning efforts. Looking at what I have, what I don't have, what I want to make, what I want to buy. And I've been using an app that was free on the App Store called MindNode, I believe. It's a mind mapping app. And mind mapping you can do with a pen and paper too. You don't need an app. And the only reason I downloaded it was because it was free. But it is a good mind mapping app if you enjoy a good mind map, which I do. And I've been using it to plan the wardrobe, just kind of, it lets me plan as I think and kind of go off on tangents, which, as you probably have noticed, I am a kind of tangenty person. So, yeah, I am planning, I need a new coat this year. I had been thinking about sewing one, but at this point, A, I don't want to. B, I don't have time. C, really, if I were to sew a coat, I'd want it to be of the highest quality materials, and then it starts to be almost as expensive as buying one. So it's not a money-saving thing, it would just be a quality-gaining thing. You know, I can sew a much nicer coat than I can afford, but I can afford to buy a fairly nice coat for much less time than I can sew one. Anyway, so I'm going to be buying a coat. I think I'm going to embrace the sort of military trend in coats right now. I'm excited about that. I would like to buy new boots. I don't know about that. I have to justify that expense, but maybe I just need to get a raise so I can justify it because I deserve new boots, right? Maybe? We'll see. Anyway, so the fall fashion planning is going swimmingly, and I'm having a lot of fun with it, and kind of trying to come to a conclusion. I think what I want to focus on this fall is dresses that and skirts that are a little bit shorter than knee length, mid-thigh length, but then heavy leggings and boots and woolly accessories. Because I work in an office, so there's a lot of layering and unlayering to be done, so things like woolly accessories are a great way to maintain temperature. And dresses are comfy. Surprisingly comfy. My third obsession is root vegetable hoarding. I had an excellent time at the grocery store, did some excellent shopping. There was a sale. And I've been noticing a real increase in food prices lately, even when I have a what seems to me like it should be a very cheap grocery week, it still comes to $80, and that bugs me because I used to be able to have a cheap grocery week for $50. So when I am able to jump on a good sale, I do. And my grocery store had 10-pound bags of onions and carrots and beets and rutabagas, separate, like not mixed, separate, for $3.50 each. So I spent the $14 and got 40 pounds of root vegetables, and then realized I would have to store them somewhere. So I've stored them in cardboard boxes and newspaper in my storage room. I'm hoping it gets cold enough to actually act like the cold cellar that it's supposed to be, as opposed to a just room temperature dark room. Hoping. Need the fall weather to kick in, please. Anyway, I'm hoarding root vegetables. But how could you not for $14? I mean, not that it's a good justification, but even if I only used half of them, I would still get my money's worth by more than. And I will definitely use way more than half of each, and I intend to use all of them, hopefully, with the hoarding and the newspaper and the cold storage. So we'll see. But if you like rutabaga, and you want to talk about ways to make rutabagas or beets into delicious food that my husband and daughter would like, because I will eat rutabaga and beets anyway. I love them. I think they're amazing. The other members of the family are a little less easy to convince. I have found that roasting beets with the fig balsamic jam that I made a while ago is a big hit, particularly with goat cheese on top. And because you only use a little bit of goat cheese, and because the figs were free, it's actually a very economical but fancy tasting side dish. Very fancy tasting, but really cheap. But yeah, rutabagas, I just kind of put them in things. But if you have a rutabaga recipe, do people have that? Is that a thing? Do people make specifically rutabaga stuff? I just kind of put them in stuff. Anyway, if you know of something, let me know, because I have 10 pounds of delicious, delicious rutabagas. Okay, that's enough for this week. I will catch up with you in 2 weeks and deliver the other half of the fashion report. I hope you have an awesome time between now and then, and that you get lots of knitting done. I will catch you later. Bye.